my Elohim, Elohim, Masei Yadena Kenanehu, Masei Yadena Kenanehu.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Thank you.
We're just starting. We just did the L'shem Yehud, so your timing was excellent.
Thank you.
And I hope you enjoyed that answer last night.
I did, very much. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I'm glad you asked it. So we're on slide 128 on the, what's it called? I always forget.
Jacob Eckert's,
but I was referring to it as the presentation, the PowerPoint presentation.
Yeah, that word I meant.
Okay. So the letter Kaf is the 11th letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And it is a letter that makes the sound of K or KH. The numerical value of the Kaf is 20. The K or KH discussion we went over last week, where it's the guttural sound, ha, and we went over some parts of the mouth where you form words or you form sounds that we call letters. You form them in various parts of your mouth, your throat, your tongue, your teeth, your gums, and your lips. So all of these different ideas. But what Jacob was saying in his slides was the guttural sound is difficult for many Americans to say. It's not an English normal sound. Whereas if you grew up with Yiddish, it's based on German, which is a guttural language, guttural sounding. So he was trying to give us that information because when you go to spell kaf in English, you spell it with a C or you spell it with a K. Or you can spell it, need to spell it with a KH. What's the sound of KH? Kaf. But it has that tail end. And that's what he was emphasizing. And we went over some of that last week because there are a number of letters with that essence. The chet, the kaf, so we have seen a letter that has a different sound if it has a dagesh in it. And we have seen a letter that has a different shape if it is the last letter of any word. Now we have the kaf or the chaf and the chaf sofit. We have three letters that change sounds depending on whether there's a dagesh, the dot in the middle. If the kaf has a dagesh, it makes the same sound as the English letter K. However, without the dagesh, the sound, although similar to a K or an H, actually sounds more like a gargle. If you have ever heard a Scottish person say the word loch, or a German say the word bach, then you know exactly what sound the K-H-A-F, the chaf, makes. And this is essentially the same sound as the chaf. And the difference between a chaf and a kaf And that's what Jacob is spending his time in these three different slides trying to get across to us. If the chaf is the last letter of a word, it has a different shape. Usually the last letter will not have a dagesh, so its sound is cha. It is possible but very rare for a final kaf to have a dagesh. If it does, then the sound is ka. The final kaf, the final chaf, usually has a vowel in it, which is unusual because most last letters of Hebrew words have no vowels. So, slide 132. First, we will look for the regular kaf, chaf, and learn to write it. Then we will see what is different about the final chaf. This is the difference in this viewing. I'm not turning it to you only because you already got it. Now notice how the word kaf is spelled. Kaf, pay. It's actually peso feet. That's the Hebrew word for palm. Palm of your hand. So what is the inner essence of the kaf?
Receiving.
Okay. What else?
Holding.
Okay.
Giving.
Okay. How about manifesting? You use your hands as tools. You hold a hammer. You hold a screwdriver. This is the essence of the letter kaf. Now, how do you write the letter kaf? It's very difficult. It's one stroke. It's a backward C. It's one stroke. You make the C backwards. Actually, it's the English letter C that's backwards.
That's interpretation.
Always remember when you're looking in the mirror, there's somebody looking back at you.
Yeah, sometimes I don't recognize.
The problem is when you do and you see there's something wrong there. This is a cautionary slide. In order to write it, start at the top left and move to the right. Then it goes into a half circle down to the bottom and finish with a line to the left. So it's not really a backward C because a C is always round. Here it's saying that it's not round. It's a line on top, a line on the bottom, and the half moon connecting them. the semicircle connecting them. But the issue is, some examples for the letter use a much less rounded right side. The flatter that circle gets, the closer it becomes to a line. And as it gets flatter, it starts to confuse you with how the letter looks against another letter, which is the letter Nun. The letter Nun is a line on top, a line on the bottom, and the line and a straight line connecting them.
Three sides of a square.
Three sides of a square or rectangle. But you can see how if the rounded part of the kaf becomes flatter, it starts to become a line and you get confused. Now here's a grammar rule regarding the letter kaf. If it is the first letter of a word, it always takes a dagesh. The first letter of the word is not going to be guttural. It's going to be a K sound.
There are some sorts of reasons for these little differences, or is it just sort of the way it's evolved?
I have to ask you the question. Did God create the letters, or did man? Or did man create the letters at the direction of Hashem? There's three options.
Choose one option, choose one answer.
If God created the letters, then it didn't evolve. This is the way he made them. If man created the letters, all languages evolve. Even the modern Hebrew is not biblical Hebrew, so there's an evolution to language. As the generations change, the way they use words change. As the technology in a generation is formed, everything changes, including the language. So, and the third option is that Hashem directed man to create the letters, to form the letters. And if that's the case, there's a balance. But your worldview will affect the answer that you want to receive. Actually, what you've really stated is, I'm questioning. I don't understand language. I'm questioning whether God was involved in its creation. If I ask you, do you believe in God? Your answer is going to be yes. But I have people in this building. I'm an agnostic, meaning I'm not sure. Do the Hebrew letters transfer energy to someone who believes in God, as well as to someone who doesn't believe in God?
Someone does not believe in God, that's
right. That sure they do. English letters transfer energy. It's just on a lower frequency. It's a lesser intensity than the Hebrew letters. Most people don't analyze it that way. Most people don't don't focus on that kind of question. But what is sound? It's the vibration of your larynx, of your vocal cords, that causes the air in your throat to move outward. And that vibration it travels from me to you, to me to all the way to the elevators, which is probably 30 feet. No, more than 30. It's probably 30, 20 yards.
And
it travels to this. So letters are energy. Letters are a metaphor. They project a communication between us of energy. Now, as Trudy said, people don't think like that. So what are we really doing? The Kabbalah is telling you everything is energy. Is happiness energy? Is sadness energy? Or lack of energy? But it's essentially everything is energy. And when you forget that, when you don't realize that, you are creating a limitation in how you can impact the tool called mind over matter. How does someone create a job? Do you create a job? Yeah. You're not working right now. And you look online today or you look in the newspapers and the job listings and you say, that's a job for me. How do you get it?
Apply, have an interview.
That's the process. How do you get it? Someone says, you're hired, right? Or something to that effect.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily those words. Why did that person say that to you? Why did that person hire you? Did you create the job? Did you draw that job to you? Did your job draw you to it? What's cause and what's effect?
Was there a mutual gravity pulling towards each other?
Yeah.
Do you have gravity?
Yes.
Your mass. You have gravity according to modern science. So it's not that you were drawing it to you, you were drawing it to you, or it was drawing to you, but you both were drawing to each other. But why didn't it draw another person to it? Why was it you who was met in the middle? Why did you get the job? You create, it's a famous word, you have all heard it, abracadabra. What does it mean? It's magic, right?
Yeah.
Abracadabra and the woman disappears. Abracadabra and the craps table pays you $1 million. Abracadabra is Aramaic. Daber. Abra, Aber, or Daber, or Yaber, speak, like, ka, the word ki in Hebrew is a connecting word that means because. And Dabra, Bria, is the Hebrew word for create. Abracadabra is Aramaic, stands for I create what I speak. You create when you speak, and you create what you speak. And you create how you speak. Is there any other question words that I should put in there? Well, I create when I speak. And what do I speak? I speak my thoughts, as Trudy just said. Consciousness creates itself. It's very, very confusing to think like that. But there's all kinds of modern spiritual promises and systems and pay me money and I will show you how to have all of your desires fulfilled. The law of attraction, all of these different groups. What are they doing? All of them are incorporated in the Kabbalah. What are they doing? What is the Kabbalah doing? It's teaching you how to focus your consciousness to achieve your desire, to fulfill, rather than achieve your desire, to fulfill your desire. Do you really think I'm a fortune teller? I'm not a Kabbalist, I'm a student of Kabbalah. But I don't think I'm a fortune teller. But I do know things intuitively that other people would not know. Does that make me better than them? The answer is no. Does that make me more responsible? Yes. Not that I act more responsibly, but I have the responsibility, and when I don't exercise it, the chaos comes into my life. I accepted both of you as students. What does that mean? I didn't have to, but once I did, what does it mean?
Well, there's some sort of mutual attraction that brought us together.
There's some reason we came together. That's another word for tikkun. You want to learn, I want to teach, but more than I want to teach, I want to learn from you. That's the circuit of energy. That's how I've diverged from your question. What was your question again? Did the letters evolve? The shape of the letters evolve? Or there's a whole, you know, if you go online, there's a whole discussion, there's a whole premise of within archaeology that the modern Hebrews fonts came out of the paleo Hebrew. Cave drawings where lines and circles were used to show the letters. And then you can draw a semblance how that shape that's on the cave drawing became a modern font. That's evolution. Could be revolution, but let's call it evolution. But we get back to the same question. Did it evolve? Yes. Was it created by God? Yes. How can it be both? We're not going to answer that, are we?
I think I was about to try and stop. Before you said anything, or before you said we can't.
Very true. Very true. moving on to the next page, the next slide. The final kaf. Five of the Hebrew letters take a different form if they are the last letter of any word. Kaf is one of those five. In any position in a word, the first letter, or in any of the middle letters, they use the regular kaf, the half circle, the backwards C. But if and only if the letter is the very last letter of the word, then it takes a different form. We will see this exact same concept repeated for the other four letters when we get to them. The rules are the same. Call this one the final kaf, or the final, or kaf sofit is the Hebrew word for the final form. We've got another slide before we get there, but you're right. There are two other letters that look very similar to the final kaf. Although it usually has a dent, it is not a dalet, because it extends below the bottom line. One other letter that we haven't learned yet looks very similar, but it is round at the top right, where the kaf sofit is either square or dented. Here's the two forms. There's the two forms. Now, we go to the next slide. We have the Dalet and the Kaf. Take it down one more. And then we will have another one. The Resh and the Kaf Sofi. So you see how the similarities is there.
Well,
Yeah.
See, this is getting into the thing where it all comes from God. I begin to think that God has a little bit of sadistic sense of humor.
Why would you say a little bit? Think about what I just said.
Because I was being polite.
So was I. Go ahead.
You looked at me a while ago and you said, well, you posed a question, do you believe in God? I said, yes, of course you do. And there were these two Unitarian ministers, and one was a radical humanist minister.
Right.
And the other one was a Christian Unitarian minister, which is another story in itself. But they were talking. And I'm fairly sure it's a true story because the names were used, and I remember the name of the Christian minister. So the humanist says, Carl, aren't there days when you doubt the existence of God? And the answer from Carl was, yes, but they're not my better days. Sometimes I have days that aren't my better days regarding God as well as other things.
That's the operative word. So,
which word is the
better?
Yeah.
So, we're looking at a kaf sofit and a dalet and a resh and a kaf sofit, and now we're at just the kaf sofit. How do you write the Kaf Sofi? It's in two strokes. One across, move back in slightly, and one down. But you have to take it outside of the box. Now, the box isn't on the paper when you write it. It's a mental image. It's longer than the other letters. And the other letters are sitting on a line. You don't see the line, but it's there.
They're all lined up on it, on top of it.
In the Torah scroll, one of the first things that the scribe does is score the parchment. He takes a straight edge, or a ruler, you know, a straight edge, and he takes a tool, doesn't break through the parchment, but it puts an indentation onto this parchment. And he does 42 of them, equally spaced. That gives him his location of where he's starting and writing the letters. So the Kaf Sofi, he writes it so that that vertical line goes below the score mark. The difference between the Dalet and the Kaf, the difference between the Dalet and the Kaf Sofi, is the length of the vertical line. Now, if you look at the Kaf Sofi, it's two sides of a square. It's not quite two sides of a square because the top line extends past the line. But there's a space, and what goes into that space are vowels. And there will be a vowel. It could be a kamatz, it could be of the T, it could be a dash, it could be the two dots, one over the other,
Shabbat,
all of that. And sometimes it can even have a dagesh, although that's not frequent. So, I'm sorry?
What's that?
No sound. The Shva is silent. So here is the four different Kaf Sofits with the various vowels that you will see. Without the vowel, which is the way when you read Hebrew in a newspaper, it doesn't have vowels. Then you can see it. The most common is to have the two dots, the Shva. And what is the sound of the Shva? It's nothing. So what's the sound of that letter with that vowel? It's a Ka. Lech. There's no Dagesh. Lech. It's the KH sound. Occasionally, you'll see it with the patas, the T. What's the sound of the T? Cha. The sound of this letter,
yeah,
with that vowel.
Yes.
Lecha. What's the parasha name? Lech. Lecha. In Hebrew, there's no difference between the two words. They're lamed, kaf sofid. Lech is this sound. Lecha is this sound. And rarely you will have lech, which is the last one. Bihuneta. It's the last letter, last sound. But it's a K sound, not the KH sound. So I know this is confusing. And it even becomes more confusing when you start to read or try to improve your reading speed. Because with all these different shapes, you have to get attenuated to recognize them and their differences. And that's why he's spending so much time on that, why I'm spending so much time on it. There is a problem. We're changing to the letter mem now, but not really. There is a problem with the appearance of the final mem, the mem sofit, since it looks very much like a letter we will learn later. And I'll explain that. The mem sofit is different than the other four letters of the final letters. There are five final letters. The Kaf Sofit, the Mem Sofit, the Nun Sofit, the Peid Sofit, and the Tzadit Sofit. The Mem Sofit, every one, the Kaf Sofit goes below the line. The Nun Sofit goes below the line. The Pei Sofit goes below the line. The Tzadit Sofit goes below the line. The Mem Sofit is the only one that doesn't go below the line. You see them there. So now let's look at the letter Nun. And the Hebrew letter Nun is the 14th letter of the Hebrew alphabet. And it is a letter that makes the sound of N. N. The numerical value of the Nun is 50. And the Nun is easily confused with other letters. For example, it looks like a lot like the bet, except that the bet has longer legs, longer top and longer bottom. The nun is shorter legs. Nun is also a letter that has both a regular form and a final form. We will first learn how to make and use the nun that we will see before we look at the final form. Look at how the nun is spelled. Nun, vav, nun. You get a sense now of where the line is? The nun is described as a bent man and a standing man. Do you see that? A bent man and a standing man. It's describing the spine, isn't it? Someone who's bent over. You make the nun, you draw it in one stroke. Start at the top left, go across, go down, and then back to the right. Excuse me, back to the left. You start at the top, you go to the right, you go down, and then you go to the left in one stroke. But what's the difference between that and the kaf? This one goes straight, the kaf is curved.
Does mem has the sound of m? Is that a misprint?
Yes, it's a misprint. What's the sound of the mem?
Mm.
And what's the sound of the nun?
Mm.
Correct. Are they similar?
Very.
And they're easily confused. And to make matters worse, if you say the word, if the ending is has an n, it's female. If the letter has a m. A mem, it's male. So how do you say the same thing for a female that you said for a male? Just change that final letter. Change it from a mem to a nun. You need to go home and practice this, as you know. But typically, since I don't emphasize it, nobody does it.
I've done it a little bit. And
you know what they say about a little bit?
I don't know if I want to know, but go ahead and tell me.
They say a little bit is a little.
While I'm realizing from my own style of learning is that not only do I need to write them over and over and over, but I need to make flashcards.
I understand. One of the things that makes Hana, and you've all heard Hana on the conference, she's not on today as far as I know, and she gets embarrassed when I say this about her, so I don't mean to embarrass her, but I consider her a master teacher, and the reason being that when she teaches, she invokes, she emphasizes all the different senses. So she teaches children, she cooks. This is the food that letter is connected to. So when they taste the food, they remember the letter. She has sight. She makes cards. She has sounds. She doesn't do recordings, but she says the sound of the letter. And touch. She has the students write the letter over and over. And she's reinforcing all of the five senses. The only one she doesn't utilize especially, but she does with the cooking, is smell. Because the children will remember the smell of that particular food that's associated with that particular letter. And it penetrates. I'm not that creative. It's too much work. Now, she does it with adults, too. She just likes to cook, so she includes that as part of her what she does. And as I just said, I'm not that energized. You know, I love to teach, but I love to teach my way, and that doesn't include cooking. So now we're going to the Nun Sofit letter. And I'm having to wait because my computer is automatically saved. And this gets saved very slowly. One more. Now we can change.
On the writing of the letter, but I know I'll never have to write. I go have to concentrate on
the reading and the sounds. Everybody learns what they're connecting to, what they think they'll be utilizing. When you're talking about a child, you want them to be able to write and read. But, you know, listen, anytime somebody talks to me in Hebrew, my answer is Ani lo medaber Ibrit. I don't speak Hebrew. And I don't.
But you understand.
Sometimes if they're slow enough. It's like, you know, when you first move to Atlanta, you don't understand people because they're talking too slowly. After a minute or two, a month or so, you slow down your own processes and you can hear them. Sheila's not here to hear me.
Isn't it really the other way around?
If you say so.
When you started to say that, I immediately started thinking of the way things are pronounced. Like, it's not Ponce de Leon.
No.
Ponce de Leon, which drove me crazy
when you first,
since I had studied Spanish
right
for a while.
The Nun Sofit is extended straight down beyond the bottom of the writing line. It resembles the regular Nun with an extended leg. I choose to think of it in terms of the Nun leg drops down. It rotates down. It becomes part of the straight line. And that's the way I think of all of the final letters except for the Nun Sofit. Except for the Mem Sofit. Here's the Nun and the final Nun together. The next, yeah. And now it's time to write the final letter. And it's one line, except it's start in the upper left, go to the right, and then straight down. Easiest letter to write. And essentially that's there's one more slide, but that's essentially our time anyway. So what is the energy of the nun? I didn't tell you that yet. The energy of the nun is negative. Is a good idea. It's a good connection. The energy of the nun is falling.
What?
Nafal is the Hebrew word.
Falling?
As in falling. Falling spiritually, stumbling, falling physically, breaking a leg, God forbid, breaking your neck even worse, God forbid. Falling. Negative, absolutely. There's a reason why the English word that is negative starts with an N. It starts with no. What does that two-year-old say?
No, no, no.
Until they say dada. Or do they say dada first? We're never sure. But you can tell the personality development by which of those sounds they make first.
I was just looking at the mem and the mem, so feet. Thank you. The mem is a mouth.
Yes.
And the regular mem is speaking because it's open.
Correct.
And the final mem
is closed.
Is closed and quiet.
Correct. Which is better?
Depends on whether you have something to give or...
Never give, you only share.
A share, something to share, or but whether...
The difference, when you give, you're bringing your agenda to that item. You're giving it with an expectation of receiving something in return. When you share, it just leaves you and goes to the other person. There's no expectation to come back. That's God. Does God expect anything back from us? He gave you your food today. Does he expect anything to come back? He would appreciate a thank you. Does he expect it? Okay. If someone doesn't thank you, do they get another meal? Does he expect it? I do love tribute. But you think differently than I do. We're talking about, should God expect something from us? You had children. Did you expect them to do it to appreciate you?
Obligated to take care of
them? You created them. The word create is, you formed them. You carried them. You nurtured them. You raised them. Do you expect anything from them? Answer's no. You're still going to love them. You're still going to nurture them. You're still going to care for them. You have that responsibility. You created them. So what does God expect from us? Really nothing. Because he feels responsible. He created us. But what does he want from us that's different than what he expects from us? What does he want from us? To appreciate him. What do you want from your children? You'll be appreciated. You'll never understand till you have children of your own. How many times have you heard that? How many times have you said it? You know I have a warped view of the world, Trudy. That's the end of our class. Are there any questions on the conference call?
No questions.
I thank you very much, Brandy. You have a beautiful afternoon.
You too. Thank you. Shalom.
Bye-bye.